Keep yourself in the loop of everything football on the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast. The latest news on and off the field, be it college football, Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, Pac-12, ACC to the NFL. We've got you covered. Listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Football Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, as always, Jeff Malinoff, and with me, as always, is not Mark. I just realized he's not with me. That was just a force of habit I just did. It's just me. Hope that's okay with all of you, because we got some things to talk about in the world of football. And with that being said, we have Josh Rosen and his ups and downs of, is he being shopped? Is he not being shopped? We'll talk about that. Also talk about Odell Beckham Jr. being shopped too, and what are the interests in, three teams are interested in him, and see if they can get him. We'll see how that goes as well. And as well as, well, since we know if Josh Rosen gets shopped, Kyler Murray goes first, and what is the outcome for him if that does happen. And also we have to talk about the Alliance of American Football and a potential deal with the NFL regarding players and movement. And we'll talk about that later too. But first things first, we have to talk about it. Josh, another NFL team has confirmed, an unknown NFL team, but an NFL team nonetheless, has confirmed that the Arizona Cardinals are shopping Josh Rosen. Now, Josh Rosen has denied, or not Josh Rosen, excuse me. The Cardinals have said they're not shopping him. But when another team says it, it just seems like that's the truth, and the team that's actually doing it is not telling the truth. Is that what it feels like? Is that what that means? And what I mean by that is just in the facts of that, they can deny it all they want, but they're the ones actually trying to pull it off under our noses. So, of course, another team is trustworthy. Because why would they just randomly confirm that? It just doesn't seem like something that would benefit the other team in hindsight in the slightest. So with that being said, moving on to what best places for Josh Rosen are. Well, to me, the best place for him is not in the starting lineup. Keep him as your backup. Keep him as your third string backup. Keep him away from the field for a year. If he is traded, get him used to the playbook for a year. Don't play him. He's not playing it down. Maybe preseason, sure. But do not play him in the regular season once for at least a year. And I am going to use this example until it's nullified. But look at Patrick Mahomes. He had a veteran quarterback in front of him. He had a year of the playbook to learn. He had time to marinate in the NFL. And with that being said, it is the best choice and best option for Josh Rosen to be on the bench and not in the game and observe it all and really take it into perspective and get better. Like, I don't understand when it comes down to it that you have to put your rookie quarterback you drafted number one or number two or in the first round, why do you have to start them right away? It's like if you're drafted in the first five picks and you're a quarterback, you have to be starter. Why does that have to be the case? It doesn't have to be the case in reality, because that's unnecessary. And when I mean unnecessary also, I mean on the terms of looking at just Josh Rosen in general. He still needs a lot of work to do. People loved him going and coming out of UCLA, and I get that, but He came out of a weaker conference in the Pac-12, the weakest it's probably ever been in the last couple of years. And then there's also the facts of, like, he played for UCLA, who had an okay record. And most importantly, his team was awful around him. His offensive line was terrible. He had a very weak receiving core. And it just didn't work in hindsight. It just didn't. That's not how it was supposed to go. So when thinking about it right now, it just drives home the fact that, you know, maybe it's better to have him sit, have him marinate, have him work on it, have him work on any flaws he has, look at film, look at any of this stuff, and get better on the sidelines visually. Because you're looking at that, you're looking at serious potential and understanding the game a lot more in the NFL than it is in college. But again, it's one of these things where you look at it and go, well, why not play him right away? Why do you not want to win now? I've seen that comment before. Like that, putting in a rookie quarterback to start off as soon as he gets drafted does not mean you're winning now. It really means quite the opposite, in fact. It really means, like, you think he is your one piece you're missing, but in reality, the quarterback, if you're missing a piece of the quarterback, you're missing other pieces too. Like, if you have a top 5 pick or top 10 pick and you draft a quarterback and, like, this is it, we're making a playoff push, you're delusional. Because you don't just need a quarterback. I understand that there's some teams that just, like you want to find the Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. I get that. But you need to build a team around him. You need and most importantly, you need him to understand the playbook. The playbook is probably the biggest one he's ever seen in his life, so he has to learn it in, like, a week. And it's really unfair in that circumstance, and the expectations are too high as well. Like, he's going to be the one that turns his team around to a Super Bowl contender. Why are you putting a 22-year-old, 21-year-old in that kind of pressure right away? Why can't he sit until he's 23, 24 years old, where he's a little bit older, wiser, and understanding of how the team operates and how the team works and all this and so. And if you keep the offensive coordinator as well and you keep all the coaching staff, he builds a bond with that coaching staff and does even better. Because how many times have we seen a quarterback lose so much focus and lose so much momentum because of the fact that he is constantly getting new head coaches and getting new defensive coordinators or new offensive coordinators, a new quarterback coach, and so yada, yada, yada. It's just a recipe for disaster. It's like getting a new coach means I got to change our winning ways. Well, what you're doing is really set your team back a couple of steps because now they have to grow a relationship with the new quarterback and the new coordinators and all this and all the other assistant coaches, and you're doomed for failure for a good period of time. So that's just how I see it, at least. And when it comes down to that kind of thought process, I think that's why Alex Smith failed. How many times did he get an offensive coordinator? How many times did he get a new quarterback's coach? And then you look at a guy like Tom Brady, perfect example. A lot of the same guys, a lot of the same routines, a lot of the same plays, and a lot of the same circumstances. And he continues to, like, always adapt to the new playbooks if they ever update him. But he has a relationship with the offensive coordinator. He has a relationship with the head coach. And that kind of stuff is way more valuable than most people realize. And if you get rid of a coach after 1 year, like the Cardinals did, it's kind of frustrating in general just due to the fact that you are, like, thinking you can win now and he can't help you win now and you're going to give up. If you're losing still, regardless of who the coach is, you got to hold on to him because if he's building a bond with that team, if he's building a bond with those players, then that team will only improve. But if you fire them, then it shows no loyalty and it really puts doubt in the players' heads that they could go any moment, honestly. I think that would seriously affect them in the long run. So with that being said, I've been talking to people about this, just like have a guy always keep his – like maybe it's like even if you fire the coach, say like I need to keep the quarterback's coach or I need to keep the offensive coordinator or something like that because you changing the way everything has been played out for that quarterback, especially that rookie quarterback, and now he has to change it all up again and learn about it in less time than he did before, shows failure right off the bat. It doesn't show progress. It doesn't show anything. It just shows you're rushing, and when it comes to the NBA especially, patience is key. And with that kind of knowledge, with that kind of know-how and the ability to be extremely patient, you can wait a couple years and realize, wow, this team is actually very talented. So that is my take on the whole Josh Rosen thing and where he should land. So if I had to pick a place where he should land, it's probably going to be like the two places where I can see a veteran and a solid team around him is the New England Patriots. He'll be a great backup for Tom Brady, as well as the like New Orleans Saints or the Denver Broncos. I know the New Orleans Saints already have Teddy Bridgewater, but we don't know what free agency is going to hold for him. But again, like, and then there's the New York Giants, who have Eli Manning for probably maybe a year, maybe more, and then he's calling it quits probably. And then you can go with your Josh Rosen guy you just traded a second, third round pick for, and he can contribute because he's already been used common with the plays, and as well he's been understanding how fast paced the football games are in the NFL compared to the collegiate level. But that's just how I see it. I just honestly, personally, don't see it as like, oh, you're saying you have no faith in him. No, you have faith in him. You just, it's a longer than a 1 year plan. Drafting a quarterback and trying to make him into the superstar is not like a 1 year plan. Drafting a quarterback is a 2 to 3 year plan where you're like, okay, let's see how he can improve and let's see what we can do to improve him and then keep going from there. But you're not. You're thinking, oh, this is all our problem solved. This one guy, this one quarterback. So I never really agreed with the whole throwing them deep into the fire thing. That was just my personal opinion. But granted, it's one of those things we're also looking at the facts that quarterbacks are just one of the riskiest picks in draft and free agency because you really don't. That, and it's the most crucial part because there's only a handful of quarterbacks that really can win games in this league, and I've proven that. And, like, yeah, some can win being carried by their defense or something of that nature, but I mean, there's very rare quarterbacks that can actually be a leader. Tom Brady, he's a leader. Drew Brees, he's a leader. And it goes from the veterans there. Like, you can see Matt Ryan being a potential leader. He's kind of quiet, but he's still a leader nonetheless. And it just keeps going from there. So how I see this is, if you're shopping Josh Rosen, like I said, and you make him your instant starter, you're looking at failure. But we're going to take a break after that comment, that pretty depressing way to end this segment. But next, when we come back, we're talking about the AAF and their potential deal with the NFL. We'll be right back right after this.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the GSMC Football Podcast. Just finished about Josh Rosen and his potential shopping at away from the Arizona Cardinals after being their first pick in the first round last year, their 10th overall pick in the draft. So with that being said, let's move on to the Alliance American Football, as there is talk of not a merger, of course, but like a business relationship between the two, like an official business relationship, and where NFL players and NFL owners and NFL GMs, or NFL GMs and NFL owners, are allowed, allowed, to move to loan players, like in soccer, to the AAF. And honestly, I'm going to be honest, I feel like that's the perfect situation for a lot of guys that are sitting on the bench or are looking for something else, because that's just, it's just great. It's just something that can benefit the whole league, and I think that would be really needed in the NFL if we had a source of, well, this guy might not be good, but let's send him to the AAF and see how he does in general. Like, that could work. It can work. Why wouldn't it work? Like, it just seems like it's a better idea in the time than, like, just having them benched, you know? It just feels like one of those things where you're looking at it and going, well, he can't get any better because he's benched, but if he plays in the AAF, he can start and improve. Because he's going to pace some NFL talent-like players as well, because a lot of others are going to get moved down. That's just how I see it, at least. And I think it could be good. It's not official yet that it's going to happen or not, but I think this is a great idea for the sport of football, and I think it can only benefit the players who are a part of it. Because now, I know they don't get to play for their NFL team, but they get to play football, and their team's going to be looking at it and going, you know what, let's call this kid back up, and he can play football for us, you know? It's a lot like the G League and the NBA or minor leagues and MLB. Like, it'll be a perfect situation. That's what I thought the American Alliance football would be, is a minor league to the NFL. And if there's loans that you can send a guy down there like that, then 100% it's going to be a developmental territory or a farm system of some kind, due to the fact that you're being players that you sent down back up based on their performance. So, or starting randomly based on their performance. So that's just how I see it. I think there's still a lot to look at when it comes down to the AAF. There's still a lot of work to do. I mean, they almost went bankrupt in their first year, in their first week. Like, they couldn't afford their players. That's not a good sign of things to come. But if they have this working relationship with the NFL, I'm assuming the NFL still pays the contracts they're going to be sending down to the AAF, those players at least, which probably be on minimum deals and short-term deals and stuff like that. So it's not going to be that much in general. But they can only improve from there, and they can only get better. So I think it's a perfect way of doing this. And we'll see how everything turns out. But I'm hoping for the best in this whole situation if this actually does go through, because – like, then you'd be like, oh, then this team will be – then, like, multiple teams might be – then I wouldn't say every team has an affiliate then. I would say, like, they choose where they go. Like, a Tampa Bay team, like, oh, we can send them to Birmingham, or we can send them to Orlando. Let's send them to Orlando. That's a little bit closer. And if you're, let's say, the – I don't know. Who's in the Alliance of American Football? I lost track, but I think I remember one of them, the Birmingham Iron. That could be, like, for the Carolina Panthers or, like, the Dallas Cowboys or something of that nature, and where they're relatively close, so this could work and such. And it's just a great idea in general, and I thought that's what they were planning on doing at the beginning. But if they pull this off, I think it could be even better. And then you can call up and bring down whoever you need, and contracts might be an issue, but we'll see about that later. But again, I think it's going to be a very interesting situation, to say the least, when it comes down to it, and if these new rule changes happen. I think that would benefit, like, Nathan Peterman the most and quarterbacks the most, because that's the mileage in their gas tank they need, in their engine they need to be better in the NFL. It just, practice makes perfect, and that's a perfect opportunity for a lot of quarterback players to take up an opportunity like that. So that's how I look at it. If this actual loaner of NFL players to the AAF works, because it just feels like it can. It just feels like it's an opportunity for this to actually get pulled off, and it feels like it could be overall best for football in general. Like, a lot of people say, the United States Football League is monumental, and I happen to agree based off how everything has went since then. And even though the XFL kind of fell flat on its face and the new one's coming in 2020, I think NFL still learned from them, because they used the Sky Cam and other camera angles and mic'd up guys like they did in the XFL. Also, that's what I'm looking forward to, finding out the team names of these XFL teams. We know, like, some of these general managers and head coaches, they're both usually the same, but we don't honestly know what the actual heck the teams are in the XFL. We have cities, we have some coaches, just not teams or uniforms yet. So We'll be waiting on that, and if that is ever news, I will gladly tell you, and I'll gladly rate those jerseys because the AAF has some great jerseys, and if the XFL can beat them in jersey looks and design, then maybe they have a shot here at being something better. But regardless of that, I think I just love the idea of loading players there. I just think it's can only bet that benefit them in the long run when it comes down to it, and also drives home the fact that, like, you know, the draft is for your future. It's not for winning right now. The offseason, the free agent market, you can easily say, let's win right now. But when it comes down to it, a quarterback is not that kind of player. He's not that ready. I really hate to say that, too, because because it's not fair to judge a quarterback right off the bat. But due to the historical significance of a rookie quarterback and what he can do and what a franchise quarterback's all about, it just seems that people are just NFL ownership and management and all this, they're all too rushed. They're all too need to win now basis rather than patient. They're very impatient. In fact, it's a flaw. And this flaw really affects, like, a lot of teams' ability to succeed in the future. Like, in another sport, look at the 76ers. They trusted the process, quote-unquote, and looked for... And they knew they weren't going to win, so they were going to try to lose and get better draft picks and get better players overall. And now they're contending for a championship. So why is the NFL drafting quarterbacks? Why is a team drafting a quarterback and starting him right away and throwing him right into the lion's den? Have him get eaten all by up all those lions, get patched up, and go out there and get eaten again. It's not fair for the player. It's not fair to the fan base to have to see their team get demolished like this. Like Josh Rosen and how he gets continuously sacked, you know? And then if you just moved him to the AAF, if you moved him to another league where he can improve without the worry of an all-pro guy coming right after his head, then maybe he can get better, improve, get his confidence back, and then put him out into the starting position and say, are you ready? Are you sure you want this? And be patient with him. Just make sure you're working with him properly, making sure you're working with the quarterback, and just making sure that everything is going well, not just physically but mentally and stably. And there's a lot of these other things where you're looking at and going, we need you, but we need you later rather than sooner. We need you when you're 100% ready. And then I think what the AAF could be and what could mean and what could it stand for. I really think that could be a huge addition to the NFL. And I think it could be a huge addition and could change a lot of careers. And honestly, it just changed a lot of careers to make everyone for the better. And we might see a GOAT-like player come out of the AAF into the NFL because he was relegated, if you will, to the AAF to get better. And then when he improved, he went back to the NFL and became an all-pro player and Hall of Famer. Like, why can't that be possible? Why can't we give that the opportunity it deserves? But we're going to take another short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking a little bit more about Odell Beckham Jr. and his future. Is it with the Giants? Is it not? We'll be more on that when we return.
Check out the show that's built on the MMA, from the UFC to extreme cage fighting. They got the fights covered. Check out the GSMC MMA podcast. Get the latest news on past or upcoming fights. Join us as we talk to and about some of the biggest names in the MMA, past, present, and future. When it's the fight game, there's just one show to check out. GSMCpodcast.com/MMA-podcast. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the GSMC Football Podcast. Let's talk about Odell Beckham Jr. As there are words of him being available to trade, quoted by individuals saying he's available for the right price, which I'm assuming could be a number one draft pick, or first round draft pick, excuse me, or something of that nature, and where you're looking at it and going, where did we get him? How much money have we spent on him? What can we get back in a profit sort of way? So obviously multiple draft picks will be there to add Odell Beckham Jr. to your roster. But here are the three teams that I said are the most interested and probably the best chances to acquire Odell Beckham Jr. There is the Cleveland Browns, which I know they can't get Antonio Brown because of the fact he's in the AFC North with them. And the Steelers are trying to avoid trading their way as much as possible. And so adding that to the other two teams, the Raiders and the 49ers. 49ers having talks with the Raiders with the Giants for a long period of time to trade for Odell Beckham Jr. They've been in the conversation twice when it comes to these two big time wide receivers in Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham Jr. And the question is, if they don't get one of these guys, is that a failure for them? Is that a failure in a season for them? Like, would you consider that a failure? Like, I'm not sure how you would describe that. Because there's a lot of unanswered questions. If they don't get one of these two big-time receivers and they're left with, no offense, like, Marquise Gilman's a great deep threat, no question about it, but he can't do it all on his own. He needs help, not just George Kittle. You can't just have George Kittle get help on his own. To make him better, you need to make weapons available elsewhere. And if you get Odell Beckham Jr. or an Antonio Brown for the 49ers, you can make George Kittle even better because he's not the guy that's going to be watched at more. It's going to still be Odell Beckham Jr. because he's the guy. He's that type of player. So, honestly, for George Kittle, he can get even better than he is now with a dangerous threat at wide receiver with him. Like, this can open more opportunities for him rather than more opportunities for Odell Beckham Jr. or Antonio Brown, whichever one if one of them goes to the 49ers, that is. We don't know if these guys are actually going to be going to the 49ers. We have no idea what the whole situation is there. So there's a lot of unanswered questions when it comes down to it because of the fact that we are still waiting on, like, the decision from the team. Like, obviously Antonio Brown's going to get traded, and it looks like that deal's happening on Friday. So that's happening tomorrow, which I'm looking forward to. I'm really actually looking forward to who wins the Antonio Brown sweepstakes, and does that put them in a serious contention for a Super Bowl? Does that put them in maybe over the top, or does that put them in, huh, maybe they can make the playoffs and make some noise? Like, who knows what the outcome is going to be when it comes down to it. But, you know, it all is based on what they give up as well. Because giving up a first-round pick for Antonio Brown, sure, I can see that happening. But if you give up, like, multiple first-round picks, that might be pretty steep. I feel like a team is going to waste their whole future for Antonio Brown. And I don't think that's a smart idea in general because of the fact that, you know, a whole year or multiple years for the first-round draft picks, I can see that them asking for that, but I just hope that's not actually the case, all things considered, because of the fact that you still need younger guys. You still need to boost up other positions, not just your wide receiver position. He's a great fit, no doubt, for any team, Antonio Brown is, or Odell Beckham Jr. is, but I feel like there's a limit to what you have to give up in order to get someone that talented. But again, I could be honestly wrong. Someone could disagree with me, of course. But I think the most I would give up is a first-round draft pick when it comes to the first round. I can give up a fifth-round pick, too, like a first and a fifth, a first and a fourth, maybe like a first this year, or a first next year, a fourth and fifth this year, and maybe add a third for next year as well. That would probably be the most I would give up, honestly, just four draft picks, one being first round. But if they wanted like a 1, 2, 3, or 4, I'd be like, can we split that up into two seasons? Have 1, 3 this year and 2, 4 next year? Because that would make sense in the long run, and they still get those draft picks, and you get one of the better wide receivers in the NFL. So it could work. I'm not just talking about the 49ers now. I'm just talking about any team in general going for Odell Beckham Jr. And so the thing is, the Cards got out of the Antonio Brown sweepstakes. the Antonio Brown drafting or trading idea, because I think the Steelers asked for the number one pick, and the Cardinals were like, no, are you out of your mind? The number one pick? Like, that just doesn't feel like the right choice in the long run, doesn't it? Like, it doesn't feel like that would be the proper choice to make when it comes down to you making the decision to trade for the Beckham Jr., because you don't want to give up the number one overall pick in a very dangerous edge rushing class, as well as there's very talented quarterbacks they could pick up. Most likely, if they're going to pick up a quarterback, it's going to be Kyler Murray. But there's still just a ton of other options that can go on through this, and we will see how all that goes. But regardless of any of that, is Odell Beckham Jr. worth the same price as Antonio Brown? Are they worth the same price? Like, if Antonio Brown goes for two first-round picks, a third-round pick, and a fourth-round pick, is Odell Beckham Jr. worth two first-round picks, a third-round pick, and a fourth-round pick? Like, I can see that happening. Like, I can see, like, maybe that, like, I could see the New York Giants organization see Antonio Brown go for that much and believe that Odell Beckham Jr. is worth just as much. And so when they're asking for offer, when they're getting offers, they're like, you're giving us the same offer that the Steelers got for Antonio Brown. And that might lead to people not taking it. That might lead to people being desperate and saying, you know what, fine, we'll do that. But if that happens, I would give the advantage to Pittsburgh, because getting two first round, your own pick plus a high first round pick most likely, and doing the same thing next year can only boost your team for success, because they're not going to be drafting a quarterback. Positional players are different when you draft them high and early, because I can't really describe it. Maybe it's improvement. Maybe not improvement. Maybe that's the wrong word. Maybe it's more along the lines of how a positional player benefits from going in right away compared to not. And so I would honestly rather have an edge rusher start right away than a quarterback, because quarterbacks just need to learn a little bit more. And edge rushing, it's kind of like the same, because quarterbacks in offensive schemes are a lot different compared to a defensive scheme for a certain player, because there's only a few short schemes when it comes to that for the defense. When it comes to the offense, it could be thousands and thousands and thousands of other plays. But if I had to make a prediction, the best possible option for Odell Beckham Jr., or the team that's going to offer him the most, is probably going to be the Raiders. That's the third team available. Then the 49ers and maybe the Browns. But I don't know. The Browns are pretty set on younger talent and picks, so I don't think they'll be willing to risk that for Odell Beckham Jr. But I can see the Raiders doing that, because they have five first-round picks in the next 2 years. They could probably get rid of one or even two of them, because two of them this year are late. They're the 24th and the 27th pick, so they're pretty late. So you could afford to lose those two picks because they're so high up. But again, this is a very interesting scenario that, do you want to give up the first, and then you just one of the first, so you still have four first-round picks? Like, I don't know what you go on from there. But regardless, it's one of those things where you're looking at it and going, between the Raiders, the Niners, and the Browns, who can give up the most? Who can give up the best situation possible for the Giants to get rid of their best wide receiver in Odell Beckham Jr.? And honestly, I think that answer is, like, do you want talent or do you want draft picks? Because draft picks, you probably could get one of the Raiders draft picks, or two of them if you're lucky. But they're going to be late first-round picks, if anything. But you can still get them and still be able to hear, see what else is out there and hear the news of free agent markets and still sign some other players. Like, you still build your team through that. So that's just my opinion on the whole thing. But we're going to take one quick short break, and then we're going to finish up the day with anything else that needs to be talked about in the world of NFL and football. And we'll be right there when we return.
Yeah.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the extreme cage fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
Welcome back to the final segment of the GSMC Football Podcast. We're going to talk about the Chiefs a little bit. And Tyreek Hill's contract is ending soon. But I don't think the end of this season. I think it's next season. But regardless, when it comes to Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs, they want to keep him there. So they're talking about a record-setting extension. And that current record belongs to Odell Beckham Jr., ironically enough, since we just finished talking about him. It's a 5-year, $90 million deal that he signed to stay with the Giants. And it's only been a short time since then, but like people are saying the ink hasn't even dried yet. He might already be out of there and giving that contract to another team. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's truly incredible. So with that being said, Tyreek Hill getting that kind of contract, he's not the drama type that Odell Beckham Jr. is, but what kind of he's still a pretty healthy wide receiver. He's one of the top five in the NFL, I would say. I'll put him in my top five. And is he worth the money? And I say yes, because Patrick Mahomes loves throwing to him. They have that chemistry on the field. And I think this, honestly, is a huge boost to the team if he stays there. Especially for Patrick Mahomes. Like I said, that's one of his go-tos. So if him or Travis Kelce left, he'd be like, okay, I still have the other guy. So he seems to still have Tyreek Hill for a while for the time being. So that's a good thought in the head of the offensive side of the Kansas City Chiefs and the Kansas City Chiefs fans if Tyreek Hill is staying and doing that high, massive extension. Like, if five-year, $90 million is the record and they're talking about a record-setting extension, it might go up to $100 million. I know that sounds absolutely ridiculous for a wide receiver, but, you know, if it's record-setting, then it's going to be over $90 million. So it's probably up to $95 to $100 million for a wide receiver. Well, for one of the best in the game, so it's not like it's crazy to think about. So that's just how I'm seeing this all go down. I just think of this as a major signing when it happens. Of course, we have to wait till Wednesday for all this to actually go down because that's when the league officially begins. The next official season begins, and then you can make all the trades and signings and all that good stuff you want. Like, we already know what's gonna might have. We already have in Denver when the Joe Flacco is gonna be there by Wednesday. I think that's the plan, at least for that time being. And I see. We'll see where Le'Veon Bell decides to go to. We'll see if Odell Beckham Jr. gets traded. We'll see where Antonio Brown will be officially traded too. So there's just a lot of unanswered questions that, well, are going to be answered when it comes down to official free agency time. And I don't want to call it off-season time because we are in off-season time, but it's like official movement time, or like, I forget how, I don't know really what word to use, but it's one of those things where it's like, you may now do everything you can to make your team better. And go. And then it's like Goodell's like counting from one to like whatever the season begins, like 500 million. 1, 2, 3, 4. And then he just keeps counting throughout the entire offseason. We're all like, oh, stop. Like, he tweets one number at a time, so he has like 500 million tweets by the end of it. Just to make him more popular. But yet, when he goes to Nashville for the draft, he's going to get booed horrendously even more. Well, maybe not even more, but he's still going to get booed pretty heavily. I mean, he got booed out of the building in front of 100,000 people in Dallas. So why can't the Nassau Coliseum or Nissan Stadium or whatever it's called in Nashville gets him booed throughout the entire city, you know, because it's kind of in the middle of the city. Like, there's kind of a ravine, then it's the city, so, and it's an open stadium, so you can easily probably hear fans chanting loudly if you were in downtown. So probably that might be a universal sound that Goodell gets booed and everyone else will join along in as well. But as for Tyreek Hill, I believe he does deserve that massive extension, that massive contract, and we'll see if he gets that by Wednesday, and we'll see if Antonio Brown gets traded by Friday. But thank you so much for joining us today. That should do it. As always, I'm Jeff Malinoff, and I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.